You're listening to Wilderness and Wildlife, presented by the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. This is a half-hour program featuring commentaries and interviews with wildlife and wilderness advocates relating to the unique natural environment that we enjoy in the wildlands of the West and across America. I'm your host, Ben Churchwell. Today we are speaking with the president of the Gallatin Wildlife Association, Clint Nagel, who previously worked for the Water Resources Division of the U.S. Geological Survey. We'll be discussing two developments regarding GWA activities. First is the recent ruling in favor of the GWA and other plaintiff organizations in the East Paradise grazing allotment case, which proposed expanded livestock grazing in areas important to the greater habitat connectivity of grizzly bears. Second is the GWA's effort to gather 1,000 voices to advocate for South Cottonwood in the face of the Highlight Cottonwood Hazardous Fuels Reduction Project. Clint, thank you so much for sitting down with us today.
Sure, glad to be here.
So I understand the GWA has had a recent win in the litigation against the East Paradise grazing allotment. Could you tell us a little bit about the history about this case?
Sure. This was a Forest Service project that was presented to the public about around December 2020, 5 years ago, is when GWA submitted our comments to the Forest Service, and our concerns at that time were basically upon the conditions of the grazing allotments. There were six of them that the Forest Service wanted to, reinitiate for grazing, and three of them were had been basically taken out of commission. One of them has been out of commission for like 20 years from grazing. And the Forest Service wanted to bring that one and two others back. And so our recommendation was to basically retire all six grazing allotments. And we gave reasons and rationale for that. But that was not what the Forest Service, after their analysis of hearing all comments and their own field analysis, that's not what they chose. But and so consequently, we objected to that back in, I think it was June of 2021, we filed 10 objections to that decision. It wasn't until 2022 is when we filed a complaint with the Forest Service and it ended up going to court. Here we are 5 years later and we just now finally got a decision on that. So,
what was the condition of these six allotments at the time of them being proposed for either expanded grazing season or reopened to grazing?
Three of them were in bad shape. One of them, like I said, one of them had been out of commission for 20 years. They've had some degradation over that time from grazing as well as other interference, human interference. There was some damage done to riparian areas by early grazing. There was some flooding that occurred during that period of time in one or two of the grazing allotments. There was damage done by wildfire. There was damage done by logging. Three of those were not in very good shape. And so to bring those back, to make them available for grazing again, just seemed like it was pushing the envelope, if you know what I mean, that they're trying to get as much as they can off the landscape. Even instead of worrying about making improvements, wildlife habitat or whatever, the Forest Service, grazing interest or whoever, seemed to be more concerned about just getting cattle back on the landscape. And no matter what condition that landscape was in, and that is not the purpose of the Forest Service. They didn't do their due diligence, we don't think, as far as making that analysis and taking necessary precautions to protect the land that they're basically that they're obligated to do.
How is this region particularly important to the recovery trajectory of the grizzly bear within the greater Yellowstone ecosystem?
One of our desires or main goals of Gallatin Wildlife Association is to allow grizzly bears and other large predators, as well other basically all species, to roam on a larger landscape. And grizzly bears, definitely the apex predators, definitely fits that bill, because we're trying to increase the connectivity between the greater Yellowstone ecosystem and the Northern Continental Divide ecosystem up by Glacier National Park. So there's multiple routes for wildlife to move, to establish connectivity. That is one of them. One of them is the Gallatin Range, crossing here right at basically I-90 at Bozeman Pass into the Bridgers. Another one is moving a little bit westward from the park into the Centennial Mountains into the Tobacco Root Mountains, and then from there they would move northward into the Bob Marshall Wilderness area. So there's several routes that wildlife can do that. This route here along the northward out of Yellowstone National Park is just one of, let's say, four anyway that wildlife can do that.
As the range of the grizzly bear population has expanded since its extirpation, they have run into conflicts as they reach the boundaries of the national park lands. What do those conflicts typically look like?
Well, that's definitely the problem here in this project initiated by the Forest Service. Is one of the conflicts is running into I'll say grazing interest, where you have domestic sheep or cattle on public land that, and they, you know, to be honest, to be fair, it is established where the private industry or private interest groups, special groups like the Livestock Association or whatever, that the cattle owners, that they can graze on public land. The problem arises, though, is when those grazing allotments are occurring on traditionally sensitive lands, and where it either takes over their food supply or their security habitat, connectivity corridors, those types of things. When domestic livestock basically becomes one of the primary residents on public land, that tends to drive wildlife away, because the next step to that is cattle ranchers or livestock owners, they want to go out there and protect their investment, which is understandable. And so then they want to shoot grizzly bears or wolves or what have you to protect their livestock. Well, that basically is counterintuitive to the idea of protecting native wildlife on their native landscape. So the two can't necessarily happen at the same time on the same landscape. You know, it's fine to graze livestock on public land, but for gosh sakes, try to do it on landscapes where, especially endangered species or so, where they're not put at risk too.
You mentioned that a long-term goal of recovery of the grizzly bear is allowing connectivity with habitats like the Northern Continental Divide ecosystem. Why is that broader geographic connectivity important to the long-term recovery of the species?
Well, it's important for a couple reasons. One is to maintain the genetic health of the species. It has been mentioned and it has been thought of that the Yellowstone, the greater Yellowstone population of grizzly bears is or is becoming an isolated species because they're, and as of right now, there is no connectivity between the grizzly bears up north and the Northern Continental Divide or the Bitterroot grizzly bear ecosystem or the greater Yellowstone ecosystem. The bears within the greater Yellowstone ecosystem are basically isolated. They don't have any, there has not been any reported or evidence where these bears have reached that potential of reaching other populations. And there's basically six grizzly bear recovery zones. The Greater Yellowstone is one of them, and that is at the moment isolated from all the other five. Greater Yellowstone and the North Continental Divide, of the six recovery zones in the North America, in the United States, those two have the bulk of the grizzly bear population. And those two don't even have connectivity yet. That's one area of concern. The other one is basically climate change, is that we should have all species, including bears. Eventually, we don't know how this is all going to play out in terms of climate change effects on the landscape, but grizzly bears and other wildlife, they're going to have to move or have the ability to freely move across different terrains, searching for different foods and to reach different secure habitats. And so the ability for the large apex mammals like grizzly bear wolves is going to be even more critical for that to occur. There's been several food sources of the grizzly bear that has been, I'll say, taken away, although not completely, but it has been reduced. One of them is white bark pine, another is cutthroat trout, native fish populations. So what that does is bears are going to have find food sources elsewhere. And a lot of times that means they will find it, they will replace it with meat from other sources, and that can mean sheep or cattle. And it's not just happening here, but it'd be happening across the West, that if grizzly bears, if their food sources are dwindling, which we believe they are, then they're going to have to replace that with something else. And there again, that increases the likelihood of conflict between bear and man.
Sure. So what's the exact outcome of the ruling that was made?
4 out of 5 rulings were in our favor, and they all had to do with our NEPA claims that the Forest Service failed to analyze the effects of early stocking dates. The Forest Service failed to analyze connectivity, which we talked about. They failed to analyze connectivity as an important factor for grizzlies. And they also failed to analyze the cumulative effects related to the amount of private land in the area, which is also obviously is a source of habitat fragmentation. And they also preferred that the Forest Service did not prepare an EIS. Of those total 5 complaints that we had, we were ruled in favor on 4 of them. It's usually up to the Forest Service to make a decision, and again, they're allowed X amount of time to do that, to see if they want to appeal the case or not. If they don't, then they'll have to basically follow the judge's order and go back and review this project and probably do an environmental impact statement or something of that sort. However, the exact wording of the judge, what she was asking for, they'll have to follow through on that. I haven't heard about an appeal yet, but imagine they still have time to do that. I think our society basically takes these, what we're doing to public land, they kind of take it for granted that it's always going to be there as we know it, and that is definitely not going to be the case. And it's our, that's why we're here, is to use science and the law to protect what there is here, what remains. Ever since we became a country, as you know, westward expansion and everything, we've seen what happens when we go unchecked. And I say that as society and as people, at some point you have to have controls over what we do and how we do it. Mm-hmm. And this is just an example of that.
Sure. As the Forest Service responds to the ruling in the case, if they don't appeal, it, as the results of that impact statement come out, how can the public further engage in this specific project?
Well, I would think if there's more analysis to come, there should be. However, with this administration now, I'm not sure what that, to be honest with you, I'm not sure what that's going to look like.
Sure.
With because they made some changes to NEPA, and yeah, this we kind of have an idea what some of the NEPA changes would look like under normal conditions, under, let's say, an initiation of a project. We kind of have an idea what that may look like. But on an appeal process, I'm not sure what that looks like. So hopefully the public will have a chance to weigh in again. But I guess time will tell.
Sure. There's another project that the GWA is involved with. The proposal for the Highlight Cottonwood Fuels Reduction Project. Could you tell us a little bit about what this project entails and what the GWA's concern with it is?
Evidently, this is a project that has been on the back burner for a couple of years, but the public was just informed about it here this past spring. It is a project just under 8,000 acres, and it's in the Highlight and South Cottonwood drainage, which is basically at the northern end of the, I'll call it the Gallatin Front. And the Highlight drainage is obviously an important part of the Bozeman's municipal water supply. And South Cottonwood drainage is not. There's a ridge that separates the two. And most of the project itself is going to be on the Highlight portion of the drainage. And it has been logged before. There's a combination of prescribed burning, of helicopter logging, of hand thinning, and a few other techniques and practices of removing logs from the area. They also are talking about putting up to 10 miles of temporary roads. And from what I understand, this would be primarily on the Highlight side of the drainage or the project area, where the bulk of the project is going to occur. The South Cottonwood side, they're just going to do some hand thinning down at the toward the I'll say toward the trailhead of the canyon there. And then they're going to do some helicopter logging on the ridge between the two drainage areas. And the premise that it's for to reduce wildfire threats. To me, it just, after a while, you see enough of these, and you said, this is basically a logging project. And that's all it is. The recent action by the Forest Service with President Trump's emergency action on the, you know, to on the timber industry to increase logging by 25% or more, I guess. If anything, it probably increase the likelihood of more devastation than anything, because anytime you make it easier for the people to get up into the backcountry, they're going to do that, and that's where about 85 to 90% of the wildfires that start occur within a half mile of a road. You're just asking for more problems than you are solutions here.
You mentioned earlier in the discussion about the East Paradise allotment case, grazing allotment case, that the Gallatin Range broadly provides connectivity for species like grizzly bears. What other species might be impacted by a project of this kind in the Cottonwood Highlight drainages?
Well, there's, as far as endangered or threatened species, there's three that we know of. Grizzly bears is one. Canada lynx is another one. And we also have wolverine. Wolverine have been spotted in the South Cottonwood drainage several times. Some of them have not been really documented to the Forest Service, but or probably to the Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, but there have been reports of that many observations of wolverine, I'll say, among the public anyway. And there's also talking about white-barked pine. There's also stands of white-barked pine in this project area. And, you know, it states in the analysis that an attempt will be made to protect white-barked pine. I guess it's easier to me. I don't have a lot of trust in things of statements like that. Yeah, you can say that. But I've seen the results of some of these projects, and it's pretty devastating. And I just don't know that I trust anything that a lot of these projects pretend. They say one thing, but the actual harm is worse than one could imagine most of the time. That's my opinion.
How has the GWA responded to this proposal?
We have provided our own comments. What we've done since is worked with others within our membership, and we tried and succeeded in collecting over 1,000 signatures against the project. We will be delivering those signatures to the Forest Service this coming Friday, October 3rd, I believe it is. And just to show the Forest Service that there is opposition to this project. One of our big complaints of this project is that there's been hardly any efforts made by the Forest Service to inform the public, other than the legal notice, which they have to do in the local paper. There's been no formal hearings or meetings conducted by the Forest Service. There's been no attempt to present information to the public, for the public to ask questions or anything of that sort. It's been very, very poorly covered in the press. There's hardly been any news coverage on it. And so one of our job, that's one reason we got involved in this to the degree we have, is to basically open up the public's eye to this and say, do you know what is going on in your own backyard? And I'd bet you 95% of the people said no. They not heard a word of it. And that should not happen in this day and age. We always try to give wildlife a voice and speak for them. But in something like this, public land, it's owned by all Americans. They should have a say in how their land is being used or misused. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we're trying to do here.
In presenting these 1,000 signatures, to the Forest Service? What does the GWA hope to accomplish?
Well, our hope is that the Forest Service will have second thoughts about at least opening up the South Cottonwood drainage to the point where they were. Realize the drainage for the potential that it has. The South Cottonwood drainage has been considered as potential wilderness by a couple of different non-governmental organizations in the past, and it does border the current Highlight Porcupine Buffalo Horn Wilderness Study Area. Up in the upper regions of the drainage, it does border that. So there is connectivity here. And so our goal is to at least protect that. It'd be nice to be able to protect some of the landscape that's in the highlight drainage as well, although that might be a harder nut to crack, as they say.
Sure. How can the public continue to engage in this specific project?
Well, I would say the public needs to engage, period. And right now they've been removed from the process other than those who have signed the petition that we have. And other than that, the public has basically been, well, the public has been ignored, I would say, and by the Forest Service, and there's still most likely a vast majority of the people in Bozeman and the Gallatin Valley that still have no clue as to what's going on in the South Cottonwood area. So, right now the only hope that I have is that the Forest Service is soon to be making a decision on this project, and my only hope is that they will heed the petitioners that we'll be delivering to them, and have second thoughts about the extent and scope of the project, at least scaled back somewhat from what it originally was.
Sure.
That would be a victory if we were to do that. I don't know if that's possible, but that would be one goal. It'd be nice to stop the whole thing. I don't see that happening.
Well, that's about all I got. Clint, thank you so much for sharing a little bit about some of the ongoing work that the GWA is performing.
Yeah, well, thank you. It's a busy time. There's always more going on than what sometimes I feel like we have time to react to. And after a while, it gets tired of you get tired of being on the defense all the time, but the pressures and the amount of the increase of threats that are being thrown out there, not just by the federal government, but state governments, is just at times overwhelming. And so it's anytime we can get a win like what we did on the East Paradise Valley grazing allowance makes us feel like we're doing something good. Anyway, we're making a difference.
This has been Wilderness and Wildlife, a presentation of the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. More information about the association and its activities can be found at its website, www.gallatinwildlife.org. To hear more of these half-hour interviews, go online to kgvm.org and scroll down to Wilderness and Wildlife. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Ben Churchwell.